The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And returning to the show, he's another fellow New Englander, as one of the main qualifications of appearing on this podcast. He is the host of Josh Nason's Punch-Out on the F4WON online podcasting network. Do you guys have an official name for that podcasting network?
I think you pretty much named it right there.
Yeah.
unofficial. Yeah, we don't really have an official name, no.
Right. And he's also the contributing editor for the site. It's Josh Nason. Josh, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a big week coming up, of course. You know, as you mentioned, fellow New Englander, and I am awaiting. This is Tuesday, April 2nd, not to break kayfabe as we're recording this. And I'm looking outside, you know, nice weather out, but in like 48 hours or less, we're going to have snow again. And this is ridiculous. It's April 2nd, and we're already planning for snow.
Well, there hasn't been a lot of snow this year, if I'm being honest.
No.
I think I only had a shovelable amount of snow like once all year after not getting a lot of snow last year. You're a little bit north of me.
We've had a few. Yeah, I'm in New Hampshire. We've had a few more, southern New Hampshire. So we've had a few more cases of that. But yeah, right. You know, the Red Sox are playing and just ready to be done with all this stuff. Next week's supposed to be in the 60s. I know people love weather talk, so I'm glad we're kicking off with this. But yeah, it's a connection point.
It sure is. Yeah, we're going to get like an inch of snow, I think, on Thursday, if that. I'm not really expecting anything. As long as it doesn't snow during the eclipse, which we talked about briefly on air, is that I'm going to Canada for the eclipse. So I'll be very disappointed if I spend all that time and energy to get there only for it to be very cloudy at roughly 3:30 Eastern time in the afternoon when the eclipse is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, Josh is really here to talk about WrestleMania and specifically the main events of WrestleMania, you know, night one and night two. The entire kind of build and angle between Cody Rhodes and The Rock and Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. And I'll start with, I'll have an open-ended question for you, Josh, that I think is a good place for us to get started. But we'll talk about the night two main event in a bit, but this night one main event, this tag match between Roman tagging with The Rock versus Seth and Cody. Here's the open-ended question. This is the biggest WrestleMania main event since blank.
Roman Cody match is the biggest WrestleMania since blank.
Not the Roman Cody match.
The tag team match.
The tag team match, which I think is bigger than night two, but we'll get into that later. But just how hot this angle seems to be, how big business seems to be related to it. When was the last time it felt like WrestleMania had a main event that felt this big and as important?
I kind of liked last year's, you know, with just the
Roman and Cody.
I got sucked into the story of it, and it's really, really hard to not like Cody Rhodes in this iteration, what he's done, and especially, you know, following his travails through the years and from AEW, that run, or what I don't know how Roman Reigns described the other place, or he was gone somewhere or something, doing something not important, however he didn't chose to not acknowledge AEW. But yeah, I was really into last year's, because I am going to stick with last year's, because I remember having a emotional reaction after it, not, you know, tears or rage or anything like that, but I gave a shit, you know, I cared about it. I cared about what happened, and I was shocked when Cody didn't win. And it made me feel something. You know, other main events that they've had through the years have been like, okay, you know, like, you know, The Rock and Cena, and, you know, those kind of fun spectacles, but after it wasn't, you didn't really have, like, at least I didn't have that connection point. And I think that's kind of part of it. It's supposed to make you feel something. I know many people are into ratings and how those make them feel, but you're supposed to care about what makes you feel what we're watching. And last year made me feel something afterwards. I'm like, I just can't believe that Cody Rhodes didn't win. I just don't. So I would say last year.
So you're telling me that you don't have a feeling, and then the 18 to 49 demographic information comes out at 4 o'clock next afternoon, and that changes your feeling?
Right. I have a much different feeling. Why do people just stake their entire, like, I don't know, online existence to this? And we've talked about how Twitter/X is just awful anyway. And just the amount of people that are rooting for numbers versus caring about what they're watching is if, you know, Triple H or someone is going to come bless them and make them part of the official part of the WWE Universe family or something like that. It's just, they're numbers. And so many people get so tied down in the minutiae of the week to week stuff and don't kind of look at, like, you know, bigger picture with, you know, trends and things like that. And just, you know, other competition on TV but so many people just, they see that as a win and they're cheering. You know, they're cheering for laundry, to steal a term from pro sports.
You're cheering for a WrestleNomics graph.
Right. Yeah. And then just, you know, taking out the people who are just trying to report it. Someone puts out a number. They're like, oh, you're biased towards this. And I don't know. And then you bring this up to them, the people that do. And then, you know, they find some other way to put down Dave Meltzer or something. It's just a whole scene. But yeah.
Well, to talk about numbers for a second, and one of the, I feel like this is the biggest angle cumulatively they've had since at least the first Rock versus Cena match, and even before that, because I don't really remember, just from a business perspective, like, Cody versus Roman was definitely hot last year. That was, and I had the same kind of segment with Adam Berger last year when I had him on this show doing kind of a WrestleMania preview. And I said, this, you know, the Cody versus Roman match is definitely the biggest WrestleMania main event in quite a while. But I feel like this has surpassed that, just in terms of, I think the build, like, week to week interest in the build and what's going to happen in these segments that are on Raw and SmackDown. Interest has been super high in those. They've had this TV show sellout streak where they, you know, have really upgraded the amount of, you know, the number of sellouts that they have, and packing in 14,000-15,000 people into these TV tapings for both Raw and SmackDown. I just think that this is really, like, the biggest angle and match that I can think that they have done that's been carried out over several months in a very, very long time. It really does, to me, you know, with the exception of last year's show, kind of put into perspective that WrestleMania had maybe lost a little bit of its luster over the last 10 years or so. Because think back to not my youth, Josh, but your youth. And you think about the WrestleMania main event, right? Let's go back to WrestleMania 3, Hogan versus Andre, right? This giant match. WrestleMania 4, we'll kind of skip. WrestleMania 5, the mega powers explode. Like that was just such a gigantic match. To this day, it feels like this huge match of incredible consequence and importance with this gigantically long buildup. Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan the following year. It doesn't, it felt like that, that is WrestleMania. That is at the core of what WrestleMania is. It's supposed to be this gigantic show with this match that is by far the most highly anticipated match of the year, and nothing else is even close. And you look back at the last 10 years of WrestleMania, and it's like, oh yeah, there were a lot of WrestleMania main events, but gosh, there weren't a lot of really like emotional investments that people had in matches, and a lot of it was part-time stars and things like that. But this, it definitely feels like a proper WrestleMania. Like it's hard to believe there'll be, I think I can only think of one specific match that is going to be bigger, that I can envision that will be bigger than this tag team match, and subsequently the main event of night two. That could be later this year. And that's if like a Cody versus Rock match happens at some point this year. But it does feel like this is just a gigantic matches because there's two nights of WrestleMania, in a way that we really haven't had in quite a long period of time, and it kind of reminds people of like what WrestleMania is supposed to be.
Right. And, you were talking earlier about some of those, mid-80s, late-80s, rather, WrestleManias. One of the big differences then was there wasn't nearly, like, not even as much close to as much TV as there is now. It was much, much harder to find stuff. We were relegated to find, watching, getting Coliseum videotapes at our local video store and hoping maybe, depending if you had cable or not. You were able to get, NWA or WCW rather, and you're able to get other stuff, but it was much, much, much harder. And obviously the internet was not the beast and didn't exist the way it is now in terms of getting information. You had to rely on newsletters and Pro Wrestling Illustrated and whatever magazines you'd get at the store. But yeah, from an emotion standpoint, of course, and looking over some of these previous main events, I mean, you look at things even like Mania 38, which was Lesnar versus Reigns in a winner take all match for there's a unification of titles, and you would think, generally title unification bouts are treated as such big things, but due to the previous years of, oh, they're just going to reverse this at some point. This isn't going to be the way it's going to be forever. It takes some of the oomph out of it. And again, Lesnar, I've always been a big Lesnar fan, but his, towards this last few end of the years, last few years rather, it just that interest level has completely gone away. And that spectacle and seeing him just isn't, to me, isn't the same.
And they had done Roman versus Brock so many times by the
Oh,
time they got to that match,
yeah.
like it
Yep.
just, it didn't feel, this match, this, Rock and Roman tag team match against Cody and Seth, like this is a match we have never seen before.
Right. And, going back to kind of the build for this, it's reminiscent of what we're not used to seeing in WWE, which is long-term booking. And there's
Well,
years, well, like the years of, I'm talking like, so long-term in that, so, you go to WrestleMania 4 and 5, it was the Hogan Savage thing built over a year. Cena and Rock, they did that back-to-back. And, they definitely, a long-term booking, and again, it's tough because you're never really going to get the honest truth as far as when things came up, when the plan was for this, and so on and so forth. But, as far as, 39, the Usos, the Owens and Zayn beat the Usos. I was like one chip away from the whole bloodline thing. Reigns obviously wins the next night. And then you're kind of figuring, okay, how kind of there was a big question of what's going to happen. And, Triple H acknowledged as much, saying, what the exact phrase, but some derivation of a driving of, the story is still, the story's not over yet, or
I believe he said the story never ends. There's
the
always
story
the next
never,
show. There's always,
right?
after WrestleMania, there'll be an episode of Raw, and there'll be a pay-per-view after that, and a pay-per-view after that, and a WrestleMania after that. The story
Yeah,
never ends.
and how he it was basically this thing of don't almost like don't lose faith, like it's this basically like, we hear you, You know, like it's a it was kind of weird because you don't ever, you know, well, I guess you hear show creators after shows are done or storylines are done and what have you, kind of, you know, talk about some of those aspects. But there was a lot of people that were upset by that, by him losing. And it's amazing that they had to acknowledge as much and in their own way, in his own way. And again, someday maybe we'll get the truth. I don't know as far as when kind of this plan was hatched and how we got here. But however we did, if it was a happy accident or more planned than we thought, or some elements were, but there were some serendipitous things that happened along the way. We got to two nights where there's no question these are the two biggest matches that they can do on both nights. And there's and it's good to have that. It's clear to have that. One leads into another. And how they've w woven this in over the past few months has been riveting. You know, riveting is not even a strong enough word, but we go back for, you know, far back is when Cody was going to challenge Roman, and then The Rock came out and said something to him. He walked away. From that moment to where we are going to get to, it's been a really fun and interesting ride. And we haven't been able to say that about WWE in a long time in terms of this level of just of curiosity and interest and different people involved and splinters kind of off the storyline. It's really fascinating to see, and it's fun to see, and it's good, and it's not even a yeah. And this is the thing, kind of the flip side of the whole the WWE versus AEW stupid debates in terms of you can only like one or the other. Fans, as much as the WWE AEW haters are missing a lot of good stuff in AEW, I'm sure there's plenty of AEW fans who are like, I'm tired of WWE, I don't want to watch this. They're missing this really good story. And you know, it's a shame that way. But you know, those of us that are able to flip back and forth and go on both sides of the wall, this is going to be, I think, a pretty fun weekend coming up.
I definitely think like last year I was very suspect of the decision to beat Cody at WrestleMania. I thought it was a huge risk to take of Cody being hot at that moment, and not capitalizing on that. And I thought that the finish to the match of just Solo Sikoa, you know, giving him the Samoan spike and costing him the match was very uncreative. But a year removed from that decision, I can't say that it was a disastrous decision to make. It obviously, Cody still feels like he's just as hot, if not hotter, than he was at the same time last year. He was able to get a year's worth of kind of storylines done without being the champion or challenging Roman again. So obviously that has worked out in their favor. This build, which really starts, you know, Cody wins the Royal Rumble. And by the close of the Royal Rumble, it was kind of really obvious he was going to challenge Roman. It's kind of been this storyline dating back to last year's WrestleMania, as you said, where Cody said he basically had no interest in Seth's world title, and that he was only interested in getting revenge on Roman for costing him the match at WrestleMania. And so Cody wins the Royal Rumble again, and the obvious storyline is Cody now can finally get his revenge against Roman Reigns because he's won the Royal Rumble and now he can challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. The following Monday on Raw, they do a segment where Seth like casts some doubt into, oh, don't you really want this title, the workers' title, and not like the other title that Roman has that you've been chasing for a year? And then they do the SmackDown segment, like you said. And then there's that backlash of Rock coming out, like Cody being like, all right, I'm not gonna challenge you, Roman, because this guy is, and it's The Rock. And The Rock comes out, and it's supposed to be this big surprise. And the fan base, at least online, which is not everyone, of course, you know, totally rejects that, right? There was that period of about, I don't know, 48 hours or longer, where people were more upset about, you know, The Rock getting that WrestleMania match than anything they've been upset about in WWE for quite a long period of time. And then they have this one of the most bizarre things in the history of WWE in hindsight, this weird pseudo events in Las Vegas the weekend of the Super Bowl, and just 6 days after the SmackDown episode, where they essentially erase the SmackDown episode from canon, where the idea that like Cody gave Roman this gave Rock his the you know let Rock challenge Roman, and Cody wasn't going to use his title shot. Rock turns heel, despite being a babyface on Friday, and they basically retcon the entire angle that they shot on that Friday SmackDown, which was supposed to be like the biggest angle they've shot in years, right? The Rock is returning and he's going to fight Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Holy shit. And they just kind of like erase that from history, and they pivot towards this tag team match. And that's obviously been hugely successful. To me, it was alarming that they could get away with kind of erasing something that they had just filmed on television a few days before. But at the end of the day, the personalities are big enough, the stars feel important enough, and the vibes are all there with the promotion that fans are willing to easily overlook that, logic gap and that erasure, to get where we are today, which is feeling like, The Rock has been very wise pivoting heel, and he's been great as a heel from a performance perspective. The fans like Cody. It was the right move to get to this type of match. I just don't. I really was surprised that's how they went about doing it, by essentially like erasing that episode of SmackDown.
Well, it's a benefit of being hot, right? You can, if you're hot, then people will forgive a lot. And
Yeah, and
there's
it captures what people want out of WrestleMania, which is big stars, catchphrases, guys insulting each other, big match. And it's okay if it doesn't make perfect logic or really not that much logical sense at all.
So I'm curious when the actual, if there was an actual pivot made, or how, because they had to know there was going to be some sort of blowback to completely replacing the Rhodes made it with the Rock. I mean, unless they're completely oblivious and like, or just saying it doesn't matter, do a steel phrase on the Rock. Like, it doesn't matter what people think. We're going to go with the biggest names in this thing. We'll fix the Cody thing later. Like, there was that article. I still haven't read the full thing in ESPN the other day about basically they kind of this the story about how they pivoted or why they pivoted
That is
and all
that
this.
was not a real article by Mark Raimondi.
Mark and Mike Coppinger, the same
Yeah,
guy
so
who ripped on
that's just a
AEW.
Fed article to talk about how great Paul Levesque is, but
Well, the one line I saw early on when I was kind of like, huh, it was like the fifth paragraph. Like, they're talking about Rhodes being doing a cover shoot for WWE 2K and or 2K24, and they said he was asked at the time about The Rock. He said, and like, why would they buy in November? Why would they ask about and this was when this happened. I don't consider him in my way. Maybe he is a main, maybe I need, maybe he wants to get in. I don't know. Like, there's no, there'd be no way that they would bring that up to him in November. Like, it just didn't make, that was
well,
kind of
people have been
predictable.
talking about The Rock, wrestling Roman Reigns at WrestleMania for years lately.
Forever. Sure. Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm, they were able to kind of that, to retcon is probably the best word in terms of, they just kind of moved on from it and never really explained it. And they just leaned so heavily into the a true, for the most part, babyface heel dynamic, even though The Rock is as much as you want to say he's this great heel, he's a cool heel and
Well,
people
he's the
still love him.
Rock. He's the most
Yeah,
charismatic
it's
person, right?
impossible. Yeah. It's funny when he said being the the best heel since the 80s. I mean, he was a heel when he was in WWE multiple times. Like he's dissing himself there by saying that when he says the coolest heel since the 80s. But yeah, I mean, how it how they've done it and that kind of that weird way of how things start early on, whatever it's done, it's got us here to this spot. And after this, there's certainly there's certainly plenty of angles and stories, more innings, if you want to take the Paul Heyman phrase, left of this thing. And we'll kind of see where it goes and how often Rock wants to wrestle. I don't think it's probably going to be that much is a guess, but maybe one or two big matches to go. And then he calls it quits. I don't know.
I think, yeah, if I were to guess what happened, and then of course this is just a guess, I would say that the original idea was to do Rock versus Roman at WrestleMania, and for that original SmackDown segment, For I think they definitely anticipated there was going to be some backlash, but n not to the level that there ended up being. I thought they thought, you know, the fans would be so excited to see The Rock wrestling a major match at WrestleMania that they would not be that upset about Cody kind of getting pushed out of that spot. And I would argue that that still might have been the case if they had stayed the course. I think the fans would have eventually bought into The Rock being in this spot, especially if he was the kind of leaning character that he is now. Like, he's The Rock. He's so charismatic that I think he would be able to make it work. But they obviously pivoted very quickly, so we never got a chance to see if that would happen. But I assume they went into it with the idea being that it'll be, you know, Seth versus Cody. And, you know, there's also like the CM Punk injury might have thrown something into it because maybe Punk was earmarked for a major match with Seth. So then they had to figure out what Seth was going to do. And maybe that was, you know, moving, pivoting Cody over to Seth, because if you're doing Punk versus Seth, what does that leave Cody, the Royal Rumble winner, with? So that's another factor that maybe changed plans. But I think the idea was that they thought that, you know, The Rock would just be over because he's The Rock, and people would they would not be anticipating that kind of backlash that they got for Cody. And I think, you know, The Rock, who's a really smart guy with great instincts for professional wrestling, he had that from pretty much the first day he debuted in WWE, saw that, you know what, there's way more into this if I'm a heel than if I'm just, you know, superstar babyface Dwayne Johnson. And to his, you know, and I think he was 100% right, because it does seem like there's a lot more into it. And you're now doing this match where there's a lot of potential. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of potential money down the road with a Rock versus Cody match, which there obviously is. But like, does The Rock really care about that? Does he care about like making money in wrestling?
Yeah, well, I think he is, you know, he's into the record setting business, and at least the perception that his comeback here has set records when talking about it's so funny now when they talk about the you know, the sellout streak, and I mean, I have no doubt it's legit, but when they talk about like the gate records, and like when he tells the fans like, you know, you this is the biggest gate, you know, you did this. What he's telling was you paid higher ticket prices than you did at any other point in history, right? I mean, that's kind of the thing with these records,
You
both on
guys, you
the
guys paid.
AEW side, yeah, and WWE side. It's the same thing. You guys paid more and set a record. Thanks so much, you know?
Well, for anything, and especially now with you know, the percentage of fees and stuff like that. Like, I know Brandon Thurston has said that he believes that, you know, a lot of times when they talk about the gate revenue, they're including Ticketmaster fees and things like that. So like the ticket broker agencies charging higher fees, have led to, you know, a lot of these gate records, right? Because
Yeah, I have, and I actually mentioned, I think you guys actually had talked about this because I had made a mention of this before to him. When I worked in tickets, we never included, and we were a vendor, a primary tenant rather. We, in our revenue numbers, we never included Ticketmaster fees because we didn't get any, because Ticketmaster had to, the reason they get the fees is so they operate as a business and they're able to operate infrastructure, and that's kind of the thing, is they're collecting for themselves. So WB, if they are, I don't know, they would have to get access. That would be, to me, an unprecedented amount of access in terms of finances to another company's books, in a sense, and to be able to say we want to use this in our revenue. I think that's hard to do because you also, there are also, you know, publicly traded company, and you can't take another company's revenue and claim it's your own. So I don't think
Well, they
they're
don't
taking.
claim the gate revenue, and I don't know how that revenue is factored into their actual like claims in terms of you know, the filings, because they're talking about, you know, they're sending a press release saying out, you know, this event generated X amount of dollars or whatever, and this was the gate for that. But when I don't know if they're factoring that into the actual like, you know, investor reports and things like that.
Yeah, I don't think they could. That'd be a pretty tricky because you're essentially falsifying revenue because that's not yours.
Anyway, unless they, either way, there's no dispute about that. This, you know, is huge business, and they have the sellout streak, and they've got giant crowds. Pretty much every, you know, pretty much since January, it feels like they've had at least 10,000 people for every Raw and SmackDown. They've been in some big markets, but they haven't been in giant. They've been in some pretty small markets and drawn some pretty big houses as well. And it's hard to think that it's because of anything other than the strength of, you know, The Rock coming back and bringing more eyeballs to the product. And to The Rock's credit, he has not been, you know, just showing up once or twice since, you know, he first came back. He has been on TV probably about once a week, and he's been on Raw, he's been on SmackDown. He has been the complete engine of this feud is The Rock. It's not really Roman, and it's more Cody, but The Rock is really the pivotal person here, and he's put in the work, at least in terms of showing up and creating the most compelling contents of this feud. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the biggest pop culture stars in the whole world. So yeah, I mean, for him, he has to. I mean, to me, like, this is what he should be doing. And I know there's been a lot of comments about, you know, he is kind of really the A side in this, and Roman is kind of fading into the background. Roman Reigns is not as big a star as The Rock is. He's just not. So, I mean, I know that there's, I think Dave or Brian, I think Dave was mentioning, you know, they're going to appear in The Tonight Show this week, maybe Friday or Wednesday. I don't know which day it is. And he's like, you know, he's really trying to make it 50-50 in terms of, I don't know how you make an interview 50-50 with two guys, but
50-50 booking, you say?
50, yeah.
Tonight Show, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But there's no way to do that, and they probably shouldn't, because if Dwayne Johnson was just sitting there and barely answering anything, and you know, Roman's in the A chair, so to speak, again, this is not for wrestling fans. This is for like mid-America that wants to be sold this, and they see The Rock as a movie star that used to be a wrestler, and they may not necessarily be into wrestling. They just need to be sold to get Peacock and watch this, to watch the show both nights. So are you going to trust the guy that is arguably one of the most well-known celebrities in the entire world? Or are you going to go with Roman Reigns, who's very well-known, but, you know, my mom would not know who Roman Reigns is, but she would know who Dwayne Johnson is.
Yeah. I think he's really kind of, I don't want to say a goes above and beyond, because that's like kind of a stretch, but he has really put in a lot of effort, especially if you consider that they probably pivoted to him being a heel. Like he's cutting these 15-minute like Instagram promos and stuff on Cody. He's doing all this stuff. He's, like you said, he's showing up a lot. Like I'll do a few segments and then I'll have a match at WrestleMania. I mean, he has been the most important, influential, pivotal, important person on WWE television the last 3 months. And I don't think it's not even close.
I mean, I can't think of a more important one other than Cody Rhodes. I can't think of a more important one in years. He's so much better, and he should, I mean, this is his realm. He should be, you're right, he's putting in the extra work, the long promo videos he does on the week on the Friday, usually before SPAC, is doing those. And the other thing too, which I thought has been really interesting, is this whole thing about his non-PG language, right? And this whole thing. And I mean, they really have to block out a lot of stuff he's saying on TV, like not just saying shit, but the F word, and like he's flowing it just into his language. He was doing it last night on Raw, and he was still like, as he was walking out, you could see him mouthing the words. And I don't have a problem with it. It's just fascinating that he just is there really having to work with this and make the product seem more, more real, more intense. And that just is, it's just real. And like, he even included this the other day after that beat down of Cody Rhodes outside, he put in an extended clip after the one that were the producers then cut were out or whatever. And he just keeps going. He's like, what? That doesn't mean anything to me. Like, basically, that Trinius is this that was a real thing. He is just as he's on just this different level. And the interesting thing will be going forward when he is not in the mix, how much are they going to let other people do this? And I'm not saying swearing, but like to really ratchet up the intensity. And are they willing to really make this change? And so many people are so desperate to get back the Attitude Era. I'm not saying like that, but to add a higher level of intensity than they've had in the Vince McMahon era in the late days, that would be very welcome. I think that would attract more people into it because it doesn't feel like it's for kids. It feels like part of this, at least most of it, at this angle, it feels like it's for adults, and that's good.
Yeah, I mean, you use the word real to describe kind of The Rock's character, which is funny because he's The Rock and he's like he goes by the name The Rock and refers to himself in the third person. Like there's definitely elements of that that don't feel real, but I feel like when the discussion has come up with, I think there was a story, I don't know if Dave reported or someone else did, but there was some discussion a week or two ago about talents maybe being a little bit frustrated that The Rock is able to swear, and Cody was Cody did obviously did a blade job the other night on Raw, but and The Rock is able to kind of do whatever he wants. He's got Brian Gerwitz writing his promos for him, and other people aren't allowed to do that, which in the history of the wrestling businesses, the biggest stars are allowed to do a bunch of things that your regular mid-card stars are not allowed to do. But what it did was it's not necessarily like the swearing is not necessary to this, but it does hammer home that I think WWE's product in general has been very controlled and very sanitized. And obviously, especially in the late stages of Vince McMahon's creative tenure, there was a lot of verbiage that was forced to be used, and the characters were all really over the top and wacky and didn't feel real. And I say, I think that's hurt Seth Rollins in this feud. He doesn't feel like a real person. He's goofy Seth Rollins with his crazy outfits, and he's got the fans sing his entrance theme, but he doesn't feel like a real person. He feels like this cartoon character, and he looks very out of place when he's interacting with The Rock and Cody in particular. And it's not just because he's maybe not as charismatic as those people; it's because he doesn't feel like a real character, and I think he doesn't have the kind of I don't know if it's the ability or the freedom to be able to feel real, like The Rock does. And I think if this is a lesson for the future of WWE's creative, the lesson is that these talents, especially the ones that are capable of doing it, should be given a lot more freedom to explore their characters and be able to come across the way that they wanted to come across on television, not necessarily the way one person like Vince McMahon wants them to come across on television.
Yeah, that could be one of the best developments of the Levesque era is more freedom on promos and
Yeah,
just more
it's not like,
left.
yeah, we don't need to see the Attitude Era again, like you said. Like, I don't need swearing. I don't need Ron panty matches. I don't need dick jokes. Like, all the stuff that I don't care about from the Attitude Era. But let these, like pretty much anywhere else in wrestling history, let the talents have a little bit more creative control over what how their character is at least presented on television, because the chances are you're going to get at least, I think, a little bit more compelling stuff as opposed to where the product has been over the last several years.
Yeah, when people believe in their character, it makes it easy for them to have dialogue and promos and so on that makes it feel legit. And it you look at kind of up and down, at least the bigger the guys that really get the biggest pop and the girls really get the biggest pop. That's kind of the ones that really stand out are the ones that are natural and the ones that are I've noticed more on the AEW side are starting to feel more like characters. And it's a fine line, but once you find it, you just the crowd will tell you. The one of the big things that I've really noticed with with WWE in recent times is they're leaning into people singing entrance songs and trying to really really make that a thing to engage the audience more. The audience seems more alive at shows for WWE than in a long time, and
They're
that's
more
for the most
alive
part.
during entrances for sure. I would
Yeah,
during
yeah.
matches, I would say, especially during the meat of the match,
Right.
I wouldn't say necessarily that they're super engaged.
But they're singing, they're involved, and if you were to ask most fans leaving buildings, they would say probably say that was a great show, so much training. They felt part of it, they felt part of the presentation rather than being presented to.
I
And
think
that's a good thing, because when your fans are into it, that just it helps that vibe, especially watching at home. You like to see people that are into it and having a great time, no matter what promotion it is. That's something I that drives me as a fan, being like, these people are having fun. I mean, this must be something.
yeah, I would say that they're, the crowd is more invested in the wrestlers than they have been. And I think that was a huge, this is a huge, like, optics change from when Vince McMahon was in charge. I think I've been pretty consistent about this. I think that when Vince, by the end of Vince's creative tenure, fans had lost a lot of hope that anyone could really, get a sincere push in the company. And if the fans rally behind somebody, they would never get that fan support would never get reciprocated with better booking or championships, because that's how Vince saw talent, as opposed to once Vince stepped down the first time, and Levesque took charge. I think that totally changed things, where it allowed for someone like I'll use LA Knight as an example, because like
Yeah,
LA
that's a great
Knight
example. Yeah.
organically got over with the audience, and I don't think he would have gotten over if the crowd thought Vince was still in charge, because I think they would have said they would have been really pessimistic, and they said, well, there's no point of really cheering for this guy, because if Vince isn't going to give him a sincere push, then it doesn't matter. And even though, it's not like they made him world champion, Levesque, put him in an angle with Roman Reigns, didn't totally humiliate him like Vince would have, and gave him a sincere, albeit brief main event run. And I think that really does a lot of good in terms of keeping that kind of fan engagement, and telling the fans that you are ultimately the decision maker here, because if you really get behind somebody, the company will reflect that with its booking. And that was not the case when Vince was still in charge. And I think that's
Yeah.
been a major, major, major difference, is just getting rid of that black cloud of pessimism that would
Yeah.
existed because of Vince's track record, and replacing that him with literally anybody else.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, almost nothing, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
And the LA Knight thing, I mean, they're at Raw on Monday. I mean, people are just, they're so into it. And it's just like, it's fun to see them into not just the upper stuff, but like the chants and like getting into LA. It's like, I mean, I don't really, you know, he doesn't really do like a whole lot for me in the ring, but that's fine. You know, but people feel something for him, and that makes the experience better. Yeah.
That's the way wrestling should be. I mean, you can go back 10 or 15 years ago and you can say like, oh, Zack Ryder was really over, and you know, Dolph Ziggler was really over. But what happened? Vince's creative, you know, really beat them down over the years. And now that Vince is gone, I think you're seeing some of that, you know, organic fan engagement momentum return. And I think Levesque has done a good job at least maintaining that trust. And making it happen. Now, I wanted to talk about, we were talking about like The Rock and feeling real. The problem I have with this going forward, like if when The Rock leaves, are we going to be able to see like more leeway in this? Is that I still get the sense that WWE's product is still intensely controlled from a production standpoint. I think the crowd miking and muting and stuff like that is really obvious. I'll point to an example. that bothered me was CM Punk's promo from I think 2 weeks ago. I watched that and he was talking about The Rock, and he, you know, is he's in Chicago, right? He's gonna get all this kind of crowd reaction, and you know, he said a line about, he just throws out this line about The Rock, you know, oh, when The Rock sparred with me, he realized his arms were too short to box with God, which is, you know, a line that he said when they were feuding 10 years ago. And like the crowd, you can hear the crowd start chanting CM Punk, CM Punk, like really loud, this organic CM Punk ch cheer. And then you suddenly hear them just immediately go away, like instantly. Like they clearly turned down the volume on the crowd miking. So then Punk could continue his promo. And I was like, okay, so they don't want any outside uncontrolled noise interrupting CM Punk's promo. And just that's one example, but you can see it all over the show. And that is kind of worrisome to me as a fan, because it's like everything has got to be so controlled and micromanaged and manufactured, and it doesn't feel real. You know, you could hear, if, especially during backstage segments, you can hear like the whir of like the white noise of the crowd making some sort of noise, and then them going, oh, when something happens. Like it feels like I'm watching a like a multi-camera sitcom show with a laugh track sometimes. And that's like the opposite of where I think this like real direction needs to go.
Yeah, I would agree. I am more for the organic, being organic. And if you do something, if you're doing things that aren't getting the crowd into it, then you need to make adjustments, you know, and
And
not everything. Yeah,
right.
not go ahead.
And this was like the CM Punk example. It's like, it's not like CM Punk wasn't getting over with the crowd. He was getting crazy over with the crowd. He was in Chicago. All these people were chanting his name, CM Punk, CM Punk. And they were like, ah, no, we got to turn that down. And that's different than being like, oh, this segment's bombing. We got to make it seem like it's good. This is like even worse than that, because it's like,
Sure.
oh, this is organic noise that we didn't plan for, even though that it is objectively good in pro wrestling to get that kind of reaction. I think we can all agree on that.
I thought it was pretty funny during the show closing angle on Raw, the people they chanted for to come out and even the odds wasn't involved in the angle at all, and that was CM Punk. Did you notice that they all of a sudden, I know after you know the heels got the advantage, the crowd just starts chanting for CM Punk. He hasn't been involved in this at all. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like it's organically they just want they see Punk as a superhero to kind of even things out, even though his arm is all
Yeah, he's not.
he's not he can't do it. And it's just I mean that was yesterday was quite the day for CM Punk, that's for sure.
Yes. The I wanted to ask about, you touched on this a little bit, like it to me, like Rock and Cody feels like the big feud for this WrestleMania build. How do you feel like Roman Reigns has fit into this build, both in just his character importance in storyline, but also in his performances as well? Because I do get the sense that there is, not that it's particularly damaging to Roman in the long term, but I do feel like him being like on the same team as The Rock has made him seem less important in WWE, because The Rock is just such a gigantic star and he's so charismatic. And he's so perfect for this that Roman feels like less of a big deal than he did like at this time last year, where he was clearly the top guy in the company.
Yeah, I mean he's definitely the B side in the team, and but it's hard because you're one of the most charismatic guys in the game ever.
Right. One of like the
Out there,
three most popular wrestlers of the last 50 years.
right? So it was going to be tough for him to overcome that anyway. But his, you know, if you look at kind of his character in his promos and interviews, it doesn't really change that much. He doesn't have a he's not showing. I'm gonna say he doesn't have range. But he's not really showing a lot of range, and he's very much this, you know, just kind of like even keel. But he is playing the, you know, he's kind of amped up a little bit the arrogance factor of you're not going to take this. There's no way to do it, and that's really kind of driven home because that just makes people want Cody to win even more. They, you know, arrogance is treated as a heel characteristic, Especially the absolutes, like you're never going to do this. This is going to go forever, and all this, and the odds constantly having to overcome the odds and everything. But yeah, I mean, as far as long term, I mean, it's a good time. I mean, this is well past the expiration date for this title run to end. It's just you can't, like, they can't have Cody lose again, because if Roman is taking time off afterwards, you can have that belt on ice again. At some point, you just need some sort of jump start to things. And
I think that too, but they did the same thing last year. I was like, well,
they
Roman's not going to
did.
be around after WrestleMania, so Cody really needs to win this title, especially because it's like both titles are on the line. And they didn't do that. So, and it hasn't really hurt them, as I mentioned earlier, that year, that year where Roman kind of had the title and wasn't around that much,
Yeah. But
it
if
didn't
you're
really
going
hurt
to,
them.
but if you're gonna, the pivot would then be, to go Rock and Roman, and then you have to turn Rock again, which is pretty easy. But I think you're then going to have this frustration of like, why can't we just get what we want? But going back to kind of the original question with Roman, he'll leave for a while and he'll come back and the pop will be just as big. I mean, he's just a made guy. His ascent into the next level in terms of just that appreciation and love. I mean, he's going to get it popped no matter what, but it's going to be if he goes and conquers outside. Maybe not conquers, but like he has to go away. He has to do the Rock Cena thing, try the acting thing and all that, and then come back and they're going to see, oh, this big star is here, right? And he is what he is. I mean, he doesn't wrestle that much and he kind of does the same thing, and I don't know if I don't think his star has necessarily, to me, felt like it's grown, but he's got to, if he's really going to kind of kick it up that next level, he's got to show more emotional range. And like The Rock has all these different things that he does, and granted, he's one of the best ever, but Reigns says he hasn't shown that yet. And this heel persona, this very, what he's done has been great. But if he wants to get kind of that next level, he's going to show something that's going to make fans feel something different, and that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting challenge. And we'll see how often he wants to do that. How they can't just run back the same playbook when they have him come back. It's going to be interesting stuff, different stuff, and there's plenty of storyline things that they can do. It's just a question of how much he wants to be around for it, and again, where kind of the next steps are with what's the end game in this next chapter after this weekend.
Yeah, I think like if you review the history of like WWE's top guys over the last 20, 25 years, there's a gap in between kind of their peaks, but like Cena to me was always kind of like the Rock's heir apparent as the top baby face in the company, the super charismatic guy that can come out and work a live crowd for 10 or 15 minutes. With his promo ability and get stuff over and get the crowd invested in him as a baby face. That's a really rare skill set. It's super difficult to be able to do that. There's only really been a few people in the history of wrestling that can really do that on a consistent basis. And Roman was brought in to be the heir apparent of Cena. That's how he was promoted. And I always that was just a really that he was miscast in that role. He just was never gonna be, 15-minute babyface fired up promo guy in front of the live crowd. And since pivoting to this heel character, it's much more better for his particular skills and his particular level of charisma, where he can play this kind of somewhat understated. There's also definitely some stuff about him that's not understated at all. But this menacing kind of cunning, evil mob boss style heel character is much more in line with, I think, his total skill set and his presentation than, big baby face star guy was. I think that's almost indisputable.
Yeah, and if you look, one other thing that's kind of worked against him is, you look at his, again, he doesn't wrestle that much, but you look at the last few, headlining big matches he's had, none of them have really, like, most of them have been pretty boring.
The matches themselves.
Yes. I mean, you look at like the Reigns Uso match from SummerSlam last,
which
August.
Was a huge match with a ton of like momentum and fan investments in that story too.
Yeah.
That should have been an easy match to have like a really great match with.
Yeah. Outside the intros, I mean, it went 36 minutes, the LA Knight match was 20 minutes. You know, he last was in the Royal Rumble in that four-way, which wasn't really seen as like a top match. It was just kind of guys in the match.
It's a four-way match. I mean, there's only so much you can do with those.
Right.
I think like in-ring, like heel Roman in-ring to me, in addition to just having very, you know, being so reliant on interference and waiting for the ref bump and that kind of stuff to happen. I mean, he makes faces and he punches and kicks guys. That's pretty much it. But I think... the point I was getting at was this character that he has now is better for his skill set, but then he comes out and he's being paired with the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, like The Rock, who's just this transcendently good at this. And I think Cody, as a comparison between, okay, it's unfair to kind of compare Roman to The Rock because The Rock is one of the best ever to do it, although Roman's the one with a 1,000-day title reign and is being, mentioned on the Mount Rushmore of WWE wrestlers and is being talked about by some people as like one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. So I don't think it's necessarily unfair to compare Roman to The Rock, because Roman has certainly been presented as the absolute top guy in wrestling for like the last 10 years. But like from a skill perspective, people who know it's not really fair to compare Roman to The Rock. But yeah. Roman has been booked to be as good as The Rock, like just in from his presentation and everything like that. But as a comparison, I think Cody, while not on The Rock's level in this regard, has been much better at not getting swallowed up by The Rock's charisma. And part of that is, Cody is feuding with The Rock. So Cody is allowed to kind of go back and forth, while Roman has kind of a more difficult dynamic to manage, where he's like partnering with The Rock and like, he can't go head to head with The Rock or insult The Rock because they're on the same team now. And it's a little bit more of a difficult dynamic to manage. But I do think that Cody has held his own as a credible babyface opponent of The Rock, and has shown the charisma and the ability to generate fan support that you would want out of your top babyface guy. I think he's done a very, very good job in this.
Yeah, and WWE has leaned in the fact that he is a babyface forever. For the longest time, it was so hard for them to really know how to book a true babyface. He's it. He's a great babyface, perfect for this role. And that's why it's been so, that clear dynamic is what people really get into wrestling for to begin with. It's the battle of good and evil. I like this person versus... I don't like this person. There's always shades of gray. That is such a thing in pop culture now. It's been happening, evolving over the last 10, 15 years, whatever. But he's active. He's constantly, he's working house shows, regular shows. I mean, Roman Reigns, since last year's WrestleMania, has only wrestled 8 times. And 4, 5 times have been, quote unquote, televised. Like on pay-per-views, and he makes appearances, but it's there's also that thing of we've heard this time after time in promos. So over the years, you're not around, that you're not around guy.
It's a meta narrative that fans are aware of now that maybe they wouldn't have been a long time ago, which is like Cody is the guy who's literally doing the work, pounding the road and making all the towns.
He loves doing this. He loves performing for us. He loves being the arbiter of right. And this guy's barely even here. And the champion should always be here. It was the same thing during a lot of the Lesnar times, when people actually cared. And he's the right guy for the right time. And this is why he has not shriveled in the case of Rock. And they haven't made him look weak, in a Vince era, who knows, probably would have looked a lot weaker, but he's looked strong. Even we got beat up by The Rock last week, and whipped to hell last night, he and Rollins. It's not like, oh, they're making him look weak. It's just that it's part of this whole thing of You want to see him get his, and you have this feeling it's going to happen. It's all part of kind of this, the potion in making this this thing happen.
Yeah, and that goes back to my point about like the optimism that the fan base has that they didn't have under Vince. Like, the fans believe, despite what happened last year at WrestleMania, the fans still believe that Cody is going to get his revenge at WrestleMania. So they're willing to tolerate these heat segments to build up the match because they feel like, you know, oh, just wait till WrestleMania. That's when Cody is going to get his revenge. When in previous eras, with good reason, the fans would be like, man, they're beating up the crap out of the babyface, and then we know Roman's going to win at WrestleMania again. And I think that's a key part of the wrestling psychology that WWE had kind of fumbled away during Vince's creative reign. Was getting fans to think that way. And now they're kind of back on track. And I think that's made a huge difference. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, Cody as a babyface, I think it's really interesting to me. And I think it's why he's worked better in WWE than he has in AEW is that, you know, Cody, I think fundamentally is a really, really good babyface worker, just overall as a babyface. He cuts good promos as a babyface. He, you know, his matches, he knows exactly, he sells for a lot of it and then knows when to fire up. Like he really gets a lot of the nuances of being a good baby face. I think in AEW, his character began to stop getting cheered as much because I think that there was still this sense of phoniness that existed with Cody that some of the AEW fans saw through, and that kind of led to some people booing him, which led to more people booing him, which led to this more split reaction. As opposed to WWE, I don't think the WWE fan base sees that phoniness in Cody. And I'm not sure if that's because he hasn't been presented in a way for them to see that, or the fan base is less discerning than some of the hardcore AEW fan base. I'm really not sure which one it is, but it seems like Cody's shelf life as a babyface has lasted a lot longer in WWE than did in AEW, for whatever reason. And I think the main difference is just the fan base is different. And what the WWE fans want is slightly different than what the AEW fans want in terms of a babyface.
Yeah, and WWE has not done the aspect of having Cody lose I'm never going to challenge for the world title match, you know, early on. I think that was hugely detrimental. And the fact that he was involved in such
the storyline would not work if Cody had lost that match in his first right. match in WWE.
Right, right.
He'd be chasing nothing.
Right. And that's part of the thing is if he can't go for the big prize, it's like, well, what's the point? Right. And then he got involved that very, very long, feud with a Nightmare Factory and the Agogo promo, and then the never-ending feud with QT Marshall, and they lost their way with them. Whether or not that was a lot of his doing, Tony Khan's doing, just them thinking of doing the right thing, and everyone trying to the VPs doing the quote-unquote right thing of getting out of the way and letting mm-hmm. other people be stars. That I think that has backfired in some ways, but yeah, this. They just leaned into it in WWE, and people, right, there's a difference in the audience, but there's a difference in some of the storylines and how they, WWE has not relented from pushing Cody as one of the top guys, no matter what. Will that change over time? Of course, because everyone has a shelf life. It's just kind of how it happens. But for the time being, you know, and this should have been the case in AEW, a company he helped found, he should have been always presented as upper tier. And they got away from it. And WWE is at this point he's the guy, and I expect he's going to be on the top shelf for anything could happen, but I don't know, 2-3 more years easily, probably, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
couple, we'll see.
I frankly like look at if you look at the WWE roster right now, who else would be like coming for Cody as like the top babyface in the company?
You know, Rollins, you mentioned Rollins, and I would agree. He's just not, there's something about the presentation.
He's a known quantity, right? Like he's been a top guy for a long time. So I'm sure he'll be in the mix. You know, Roman will be in the mix, obviously. Like there, Cody has, despite not being a champion, has been the top baby face in the company, I would say, for the last year easily.
As far as being able to garner sympathy, I mean, you look at guys like him, Sami Zayn, but Sami Zayn at this point, not, I mean, he'll, I suspect he's going to beat Gunther and have a, that's going to be a fun moment as well. And, but yeah, as far as like getting, having that sympathy, and being able to portray that, which gets you really just lodged in people's hearts. I don't see anyone, there's no one else. That's why he's so unique. And that's part of it, is actually emotionally caring. And, you know, there's guys like, you know, in terms of bay faces, Jey Uso is very popular, but I have not seen the sympathy in terms of, I want to see him get revenge. It's just not there. And
yeah, there are a lot of guys that get, you know, their entrances are over. They might have some catchphrases that are over. But I do feel like Cody is at a different level in WWE in terms of like the emotional investment in matches that they have.
And it's earned. It's, people know it's history and it's earned, and that helps, you know, helps a lot.
He's just trying to win the title that Dusty never won, the WWE right. Universal Championship.
That's right. And to me, that is such a, that's been completely pushed to the background.
And I'm glad because I didn't like that angle. Like, I thought it was really fake last year when they were doing the stuff where like Paul Heyman was like, oh, Dusty actually liked Roman and wished he was his son and not you, Cody. Like, that was fake, stupid bullshit that I didn't care about. And I'm very glad that that has not really been that big of a part of the story, because and you know, as a wrestling historian, it's like Dusty didn't care about winning the WWE championship. Like, Dusty was the booker and booked himself to be champion like for like 20 cumulative days. Like, it was, you know, it's one of those things that's like it always felt weird, and Cody doesn't bring up Dusty in every promo like he used to. So I think I'm very glad we've gotten away from that.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be, if he does win, it'll be kind of, it'll be part of the whole post, you know, the post promo on Raw, that it'll get mentioned, but it seems like it's bigger than that. And I think that's good. And yeah, the inclusion of The Rock and just this whole thing has just helped be like, this is a personal thing now, not just a Dusty Rhodes thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other thoughts? I and the answer is I really don't, but do you have any other big thoughts on like WrestleMania and the WrestleMania card outside of those kind of two matches?
You know, overall it's the amalgamation of a lot of matches that are, they look good, they're interesting. Whether or not people care is another thing. You know, I you look at like the Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso match. I don't know. I think the entrances would be good, but I think, you know, are people really invested?
It kind of feels like, I was gonna say, it kind of feels like that feud peaked like for the Roman Jey Uso SummerSlam match.
Yeah.
And they've kind of been treading water before the brothers kind of have their big blow off.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. I mean, there's some, you know, the Sami Zayn Gunther match, I think is going to be a moment, because I think people expect Sami Zayn to win and end this streak. And I think that's probably good for, you know, for all people involved. You know, the Ripley versus Lynch match, I think is, you know, it's notable. It's two of the, you know, arguably two of, I would say the two biggest women stars, but it's definitely been made to a, you have to turn the heat up a little bit. I don't think the mentioning of the daughter is really doing it for me as much as just, it's two of the top stars, and that's kind of
the two most popular women in the company by far.
Yeah.
Rhea's, you know, Rhea's character is indisputably popular in WWE. But like Rhea matches Rhea as the wrestler, it just that doesn't seem over. She's over as like this kink worker, I guess. That's probably not a great term, but
I know what you, it's a different, what this is one of the things I like about, though, it's a different presentation and a different, like, there's just so many different avenues that they're really running into with all these different factions, that there's really something for everyone, from the Judgment Day to the LWO to this to that. Like, you can get your hooks into something, even if something else isn't working for you. But her run is just, it's been like, dominance, and it hasn't been like, wow, this has been,
Yeah, I mean, she's had the title for a year. Like, does she have any memorable defenses that really jump out to you? The victory at WrestleMania last year was obviously a great match against Charlotte, but I think she has wrestled I looked at these numbers like a week or two ago, but she has wrestled an extremely low number of matches. Like, I think she's had about like I want to say like 25 matches that have been televised since last year, when and she's been the women's champion the entire time.
Interesting. Yeah.
So
Well, I think part of that is they don't want, they're really into this kick of
long title runs.
bit of long dominant title reigns. And if you're like, okay, we're going to promote this person up, and but however, we don't want Ripley to lose until, X date, if they're looking to do a year long reign or something like that. But yeah, I mean, part of that, part of the excitement in reign ending is excitement in the challengers. And, Becky's probably as close as going to get now. You could do Jade down the road, but do you want to essentially repeat what you did over the last year? Obviously you have Bianca Belair, and there's just, and that's also the problem having two. I don't love two titles in the company anyway, but you have two women's titles, so that kind of splits things up a bit. So yeah, I mean, going up the rest of the card, again, like Jade Cargill making her in-ring debut, protecting her obviously in a,
Well,
six
for her
woman.
match day, she wrestled. She was at the Royal Rumble.
Right, that's right. Yeah, for yeah, exactly. Yeah, good point. So having her kind of in the in a more traditional match, I mean, that's of interest, but isn't really like, I don't think must see. It's more kind of like where they go there. Yeah,
Yeah,
the interesting one, it.
Bianca Belair, who's tagging with Jade and Naomi. I mean, she main event WrestleMania, night one of WrestleMania, like back to back years.
I think so, yeah.
Or
Against Sasha Banks, and then Rhea, right? Was that it, or am I
no,
thinking that
against
wrong?
Becky,
Banks, Becky,
right?
right? Yeah.
Maybe they did that Austin Owens thing one night that was like technically the main event slot, I think. But I mean, she had two huge singles matches and I think performed really well in both of them. But ever since she kind of lost the women's title to Io Sky, I feel like her booking hasn't been anywhere close to where I think it should be, given how much investment they've had in her in the past. And I think the quality of her performance just feels like another woman on the roster after, getting these big matches at WrestleMania and having these title runs and performing well. I don't think it has anything to do with her performance. I just think that they haven't kept up her momentum as well as they probably could have. I think Bianca versus Rhea should have been like coming out of WrestleMania last year. With Bianca and Rhea both winning, their big matches, I was like, those two gotta wrestle each other. Those are the two biggest women stars right now they have in the company. They're both young. They're both haven't been super overexposed, and they haven't wrestled each other. They've been on separate brands, and I think that's been to the detriment of both of them in terms of just them feeling important as wrestlers.
Yeah, and looking at night two, the Rollins McIntyre match is really kind of been put in the rear view with all the stuff going on in the main event. If Rollins, depending on how good his knee is, he could lose here and then be out for a while to get healthy. You have Io Sky against Bayley. I expect, Bayley, if they're going to go on the feel good theme, I expect, Bayley could win that, and the evil reign of Io Sky. But things like, the triple threat between Logan Paul and Orton and Owens, there'll be some spectacle in that, but some big RKO high spot. But
Feels
LA
that
Knight,
feels like just a weird three weird people to be in a match against another. Where
it
every
does, yeah.
WrestleMania has these kind of matches that are just like three guys that you kind of want to get on the show, so you put them in a triple threat or a multi-man match. But it's just kind of odd that they're all wrestling each other in a triple threat match. That one's kind of odd.
They had the
And
random ladder match, the
you
six
gotta
man, the
have that.
16
That's
ladder.
and
Yeah.
that's, if they're gonna do a match
Yeah.
just to get a lot of people on the show. Just do a match where guys are gonna fall off of ladders and stuff like that. It's always gonna get over. If you don't have another match on the show that's like that, it'll be a fun spectacle. Is someone gonna emerge from this match as a huge star? I don't think so. But I think it's a pretty good. I have no problem with those matches. Kind of a not the greatest past year for Austin Theory. You know, he beats John Cena at WrestleMania, and now he's in this multi-man tag team match as maybe the least important tag team in the entire match.
Yep, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's yeah, it's just kind of going to the card. There's names, but in terms of all the emotion is kind of really taken up with the two main the main program, which it should be, and everything else is just it's going to be decent in-ring action, entrances, and the pops at the end, which I expect to be Bayley, Sami Zayn. The night one will be Rock and Roman Reigns winning to kind of add another nefarious thing. So I fully expect Steve Austin to make an appearance during the night two main event in some sort of
So you're
opposition to Rock.
so you think that why would Steve Austin come out there? He hasn't been
Well,
teased at all, unless you count that he
that's the
was on the
point.
back of that.
It's a surprise. He's one of the Rock's greatest rivals, and I expect the odds are uneven for Cody Rhodes. He's going to get some help. Some people thought maybe Cena is going to make an appearance during this as well to help even things out, but there's not. I guess there is some history with him and Rock, but it'd be I don't know if that fits as well. But I expect that both main events are going to be that main event on night two is going to be such a spectacle of just all kinds of stuff happening. I hope it doesn't overshadow the finish. I don't think it will. I think they're smart enough to avoid that, but people are going to be exhausted by the end of that thing. Put it that way. I think it's going
Well,
to be
they're going to be
crazy.
exhausted because it's going to be at the end of a very, very, very long weekend. And I
Very
heard
true. Very
it's
true.
going to be cold. I mean, we were talking
Oh.
about snow, this week here, but I saw it's going to be like the high 30s, in Philadelphia, like by the time, it's 11 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh. Well,
Which
that's
I don't
my
know if
dream.
th that will impact the crowd, energy at all. The wrestlers should be fine in that weather.
Yeah, I again doing Northeast WrestleMania in early April. It's such a an outdoor one at that. That is a it's a big risk, but I mean they did it for a reason. I look at the temperature right now is 40, 40 degrees during the night. So we'll see. Even during the day, it's not that warm. It's only like 60. So on Sunday itself. So at least it's not gonna be raining at this point. But yeah, it's those stadium shows are always tough, with reactions and so many people are just so far away, they're just kind of there for it. So we'll as always, it's the opposite hard cam shot that really kind of tells you those are the people that you obviously see the most.
The last question is who what do you think happens on now you told me you think that Cody that Roman and Rock win the tag team match, so it's bloodline rules, whatever bloodline rules are, which I'm gonna assume means just the bloodline can interfere a ton.
Anything goes. Yep.
And then who leaves WrestleMania night two as undisputed WWE Universal Champion?
Cody Rhodes
You don't think
has to be.
Senior Money in the Bank cashes in for heat? Think of the heat, Josh.
Oh my God, that'd be such a Vince move, right? No, I think that could happen. If they don't want Drew to beat Seth for some reason, and Drew just lays him out, and Priest leaves as the world heavyweight champion,
Yeah.
I could see that for sure. Because he's got to cash in at
They
some
haven't done
point.
anything with him.
They have it, and maybe that's the thing they want people to forget. That's very, very possible. But yeah, I think it's Cody's night, Cody's weekend, in a lot of ways, and it's going to be that main event is going to be like a 45-minute spectacle, and I'm all here
The
for it.
entrances alone are going to be 45 minutes.
I know.
The
I know.
yeah, I would say what I think is going to happen, if I was to bet on it, I would say Cody Rhodes is going to win the title. I don't really have an emotional connection to anything in WWE, so I'm kind of rooting for Roman to win because I think that would be the funniest, like as a observer. To just see the reaction from people if Roman retains. My dream is Tama Tonga comes down and costs Cody the match.
Okay.
I think, well, I have Cody, the how this would happen was that Cody and Seth win night one, which keeps all bloodline members from interfering at ringside. And then Tama Tonga debuts as like the newest bloodline member. And like he runs down and like stuns Cody Rhodes, and then Roman hits him with a spear and wins. That would be the funniest outcome for me. Is that gonna happen? Probably not. I think Cody's going to win, but like I would have a very enjoyable like hour online afterwards,
Yeah.
seeing people's reactions to that, because I think it would be hilarious. But
I think Twitter might have an issue if that happens, but we'll
yeah,
see.
I think this
Yeah.
is I think Cody's going to win. I think it's
I do too.
would be I think it would be very problematic if he didn't. But I thought it would be problematic last year, and it didn't work out. It worked out fine for them. So maybe they'll run it back again. We're only in the third inning after all. Maybe we're in the fourth now. Maybe we're the starting pitcher is going through the order, a second time by this point. Josh, do you have anything else you want to plug? You got any content coming up over the next few days or things like that?
Yeah, I just today being Tuesday, depending when people hear this, I did a about 45-minute interview with Josh Barnett of Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, the
The
10th
War
anime,
Master.
the War Master himself. We talked about Bloodsport X, which is coming up on Thursday on Triller with part of GCW's Collective Weekend. We also talked about Bloodsport Bushido, which is coming up in Tokyo, Japan in June. We talked about his bourbon line, shower burgers. What else did we talk about? Oh yeah, Roadhouse.
Shower burgers.
Shower burgers.
Is
Yep,
this
shower
is that
burger.
a brand of something, or is this we're just talking about eating burgers in the shower?
Eating burgers in the shower. You'll hear about that and more on the podcast. And also he talks, if the rumor that more WWE talents are going to appear at Bloodsport on Thursday, a little bit more on how the Baszler thing, Shayna Baszler thing came about. And then also we talked about Roadhouse, his opinion on the Roadhouse movie. So all kinds of stuff. So that's available now. And yeah, we're going to be doing wall-to-wall content all weekend long on WrestlingObserver.com and audio shows and plenty of written stuff to read about. And we're doing a live coverage of several of the other shows like Bloodsport, Joey Janela's Spring Break, the March Hickok Super Show, Mania itself, NXT, Ring of Honor, all the usual stuff we'll be covering all weekend. So it'll be a busy weekend, but it's a busy week in our sport. So yeah, we're happy to do it and ready to get this thing really going.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Josh. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I want to thank all the listeners who continue to listen. Just any continuing listening to the show is probably the best support you can show. Give us 5 stars in your podcast app of choice. I'm told that's extremely important, is to give 5 stars and leave a good review. But give an honest review. Don't just slap that 5 stars. I want to feel like I earned it. Don't give it like a Dave Meltzer, it's Randy Orton in the ladder match kind of 5 star. Give it a real thoughtful 5 star. But thanks a lot, everyone, and I will talk to you again after a while.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.